Hi, I'm Greg Lefebvre, the host and creator of the Compulsive Story Podcast. Welcome to another segment of Pass the Mic, where once or twice a month, we invite a talented guest with a great story to join us on the podcast and tell their story. Then I follow up with a story of my own about the same subject. Today's guest is Jonathan Menjivar. Jonathan is the senior producer at Audacy's Pineapple Street Studio and host of the critically acclaimed original podcast series, Classy with Jonathan Menjivar, selected as the best podcast of 2023 by Time, The New Yorker, and The Atlantic. His podcast, Classy, is a collection of surprising stories, juicy, uncomfortable interviews, and engaging segments that explore the ways that class infiltrates our day-to-day lives. Jonathan, a working-class Latino kid, went on to a successful career in media and became someone who likes oysters, wears cashmere socks and classy clothes, and is very conflicted about it all. Welcome to Pass the Mic, Jonathan.
Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure, my pleasure. So we're going to start out with a story from you.
Yep.
Well, whenever you want, you're on.
Okay. So when I was 18 years old, for my 18th birthday, I got a car as a gift. My parents were divorced and both had remarried. So it was from like two sets of parents. So, in every way, it was sort of combining a bunch of things. But they got me this really beautiful old car. It was a 1961 Plymouth Valiant.
Oh, nice.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. It was like called a sleeper classic, you know, a thing that's not quite really a classic car, but has the potential to be. It was red. It had, you know, cat eye rear lights and like this beautiful wheel well and this really cool push button transmission. It was an automatic, but you could still kind of push it into different gears if you wanted. It was great. And, you know, like I grew up in Southern California, suburban LA. And so cars are important. I was like one of the last kids at my high school to get a car. It was a big deal that I was a kid who was still walking home from high school. Like, I was so happy to have this car, like, represented all of the freedom that having a car means, you know, not having to rely on my girlfriend anymore to drive me around, you know, going to Denny's and being there at 1 a.m. with your friends and just everything that you want a car for. But because it was old, it was also kind of dangerous, you know, on top of it being really beautiful. One of its main features was that on the hood, there was a big rusted out circle because the previous owner, a teenage girl, had let it overheat and the engine started on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't take much for it to overheat. You know, it's Southern California, it's hot, it's this old car. And so I was constantly watching the temperature gauge, you know, and then I'd have to run the heater in order to like draw heat off of the engine. So, you know, it's like 90 degrees outside in California. you're driving with the heater on and the windows open and just completely sweating. But it was the only way to safely use the car at times, particularly if I ever got on the freeway, which if you want to go anywhere in Southern California, that's a thing you have to do. So yeah, I'd be like, you know, driving slowly, like 55 miles an hour in the slow lane with the heater on, windows open. And then it also just like other things would happen. It was a simple enough car that I could replace things. I could fix things, but I don't even remember what was the thing I was replacing.
Carburetor.
There was something simple that I replaced, but I like switched the wires and so almost started a fire on the car. And then there was also just like silly stuff like the horn sometimes when you were making a turn would engage and then just like it sounded like I just had my hand on the horn, you know. And this is not like a small Honda horn, it's like a train horn basically.
Totally humiliating.
Yeah. And the only way to stop it was to get out of the car, pop open the hood and disconnect the horn.
This is so familiar. Yeah.
So, you know, it was like an amazing car, but not without its problems. But I still loved it. You know, it was the kind of thing that like old guys would stop and talk to me at gas stations.
Yes.
So I had this car. So yeah, I got it for high school graduation. I was driving it to college. I went to a commuter state school, so I was driving like half an hour every day. And then eventually it got to the point where like it wasn't working so well. And so I would drive to the bus and park it like in a supermarket parking lot and then take the bus to school. But, you know, it was for the most part like still getting me around. And one day I'd driven to the mall half hour from home. I was coming home and I went to step on the brake and my foot just went all the way to the floor, just like the brakes had gone out.
Gotcha.
I did not know what that felt like, but suddenly you do, when just like there is no resistance at all and your foot is just like, yeah, you can't stop.
And what was your position on the highway at this point vis-a-vis?
Luckily I was not on a highway. I was on a regular street. I was going about 20 miles an hour, mm-hmm. In the right lane. But 20 miles an hour when you don't have brakes is suddenly very fast. So I just, you know, I obviously panicked. You know, there was a light ahead of me and I could see like, okay, there are people there. Like if I don't do something, I'm just going to crash.
Right.
And to my right, there was a parking lot. And so I was just like, okay, I'm going to turn into this parking lot and just drive around until the car stops, I guess. I don't know. And then like I pulled into this parking lot thinking like I'm just going to drive around, try and slow down. And then it's not happening. I'm not slowing down at all. And then like the part of the parking lot I turned into, I don't know if it was like a storage facility or what, but there were like these little garages around. I knew like I could see like there was a turn I was going to need to make, or I was going to crash into a wall or hit one of these garages. So the first thing I did when I realized I wasn't really slowing down, I'd already popped the car into neutral. I opened the driver's side door and I stuck my foot out. And like,
you mean you were going to drag your foot?
Yeah, I did. Like, I tried to do a Fred Flintstone, you know.
Right.
I don't know. Surprise, like, that does not work. It doesn't slow the car down at all. Mm-hmm. All it does is just tear up your shoes.
So you're in neutral at this point, though. So nothing is powering the car except inertia?
Yep, right.
Okay.
Right. And so it doesn't really feel like I'm slowing down at all. And so like I'm going around these garages. I approach that place where I'm going to hit a wall, which means I have to turn. And like, I don't know how fast I was going at that point, but like it was fast enough that the turn felt really steep and bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then I turn around to the other side of the garages and I see one is open and there's a guy in it. I have my window open. And I just start screaming. I just like, help, you know, I need help. He runs up to me. He's in shorts and a t-shirt and flip-flops. He grabs the side of the window and he's like trying to slow down the car. And like the poor guy is just like struggling. It's not working. You know, it's not doing any better than it was when I put my foot down. And as he's doing it, that's when I remember that cars have emergency brakes.
Ah, okay, there we go.
And I decide what I'm going to do is I just slowly press on the emergency brake, come to a stop, and I don't let on that that's what I have done. I let this guy believe that he saved my life.
Wow, yeah.
That Mr. Flip-Flop Man.
Well, that's, you know, that's what you should have done. You handled that just right.
So, yeah, so I survived that. And then eventually, like, we did fix the car. We fixed the brakes. And then I was driving home from college one day, and it happened again.
Oh, dear.
A few months later. And, like, that time, I went for the emergency brake right away. It wasn't doing enough. I was going too fast. There was a red light, and I ended up having to, like, swerve through an intersection around a car that was honking. It was really, really frightening.
Oof.
Yeah. And then I couldn't afford to repair it. So it just kind of like, it sat in the parking lot of my apartment complex for a good 6 months until the people who managed the apartment complex had it towed.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the end of it. Yeah.
That was the end of it. Yeah. I gave up the title to pay the towing bill and said goodbye. So
got it. Got it.
Yeah.
They sold it for scrap, I'm sure.
Don't tell me that, Greg. I like to imagine that somebody's out there driving it now safely, that they could afford to fix it.
Well, that's true. That could definitely happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Can I tell you one more thing about
sure.
this?
Sure. Go ahead.
Which is that, like, sometimes I still have dreams about this. Like, I have dreams either that my foot goes all the way to the floor, or more often the dream that I'm having is that I'm in the back seat of a car and no one is driving it, and I just can't control it. And I don't know what it's, I mean, it's just like either it was a traumatic event, or like, does it happen when there are like moments in my life where I feel like things are out of control? I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah. So.
But yeah.
And it's funny how they come back to haunt you in your dreams.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Well, that was a great story, a real cliffhanger.
Thanks.
So I married into a first generation extended Jewish family in the Bronx when I was 20. I was the only Gentile in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And my father-in-law was a wealthy garmento. He made a lot of money in fashion, and he retired at age 40. And he was the sort of the patriarch of this family. It was mostly working class Jews. And he had this tons of money. Every Sunday, he and his wife hosted a dinner party for the less affluent members of their family in their 9-room Art Deco apartment on the Grand Concourse in the Bronx.
Wow.
And after one such dinner party, my wife and I were going to test drive a small used Renault 10 that cousin Kenny had for sale for $1,200. Actually, I'll tell you specifically about the beginning. So we all entered this small, tight passenger compartment. Renault 10 is a tiny car and also a terrible car. And I pulled out into traffic on the Grand Concourse, and the first thing I noticed was that there was a couple of hiccups when I shifted gears, meaning there's probably some damage to the gear teeth. Next, I could feel that the steering was loose, very loose. And finally, the brakes were very spongy. I pushed all the way to the floor, and it stopped, but it wasn't stopping quickly. So I decided he wanted $1,200 for the car, and I'm going to lowball him, offer him $600. But as we're driving along, he says, all right, we're going to head back to the apartment, and he's going to make a wrong turn on the Grand Concourse. I said, Kenny, apartment to the right. He said, no, it's to the left. No, it's to the right. No, it's to the left. So I said, would you care to bet? And he said, I'll bet. I said, all right, let's bet the car. And he said, fine. So then we pull onto the concourse, and he says, ah, damn, I thought we were on Eastburn Avenue, not Burnside Avenue. And I said, well, you just lost yourself a car. So now my wife is saying to me, whispering to me in this tiny car, so of course he can hear, Greg, you can't do this. You know, my family will never forgive you. This is, you're just ruin your reputation with the family. And I said, of course I can do it. A bet is a bet. You know, I come from a betting family. So long story short, we go back to the apartment. He's smart. He skips the dining room where everybody's waiting to see how the test drive went, and he grabs two of his uncles and takes them in the back room, and then they grab me and drag me in, and they say to me, not in front of him, listen, Kenny is not right in the head. He's got a soft head. He's I don't want to say the word retarded, but he's retarded. He just can't do this to him. He doesn't know what he's doing. So I'm like, oh, boy. And then my wife comes in and she libels me. And so finally I agree to take the car. And I don't even negotiate because it's too late for that now. So I buy the car at full price. And it's a complete bucket of bolts. It's just trouble from beginning to end. Like you, I had to open the hood. Once I started, I had to open the hood, and I had a little piece of wire that I would tie to the, not the gauge, but there's a little throttle lever
mm-hmm.
to keep it running enough to get going. And one day in the Bronx, I was at a stoplight and it stalled out. And when I went to open the hood, I burned my fingers really badly. And I slammed the door. I kicked in the side door as hard as I could. And then I abandoned the car in the middle of traffic and went to a bar to have a drink. The cops came in. The cops came to me before I got my double scotch. And uh-huh. forced me to go out. They pushed it off the road, and then that was it. I abandoned it there. And then I got divorced. I didn't think much about my ex-family, unless there was a story about French cars or about extended families. But I have this little lacuna in my brain where I still, to this day, I can dredge up that story and feel resentment that I didn't stick to my guns. If I ever run into Kenny, I'm going to tell him where to stick his supposedly retarded head. That's the end of my story. So So listen, that was a great story, Jonathan. I really appreciate hearing it. And I was biting my nails all the way through. And I thank you so much for coming on to the Pass the Mic.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's been great fun. So, okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Are you ready to tell your own story on The Compulsive Storyteller? We're launching a new segment of guest storytelling, and we want to hear your stories. Email a voice recording to hello@thecompulsivestoryteller.com. I'll play selected stories on upcoming episodes. Try to be as clear as possible in your recording, and we reserve the right to lightly edit them for length and clarity. Leave your name or contact information in your voicemail or email, and let us know if you'd like the story to be anonymous. I can't wait to hear from you. The Compulsive Storyteller is now co-produced by Greg Lefebvre and Fadia Monserrat, who's also arranged the music and created the special effects. Emily Ramon does design, research, editing, and marketing. Peter Kakoma has made our theme music and for many seasons co-produced the show with me. If you enjoyed this week's episode, let us know. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Compulsive Storyteller, and we'd love to hear from you. This podcast is independently produced, so we really appreciate all your help and support. Share the show with your friends, subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave a review. You can also check out our website, thecompulsivestoryteller.com, for more information. Thanks for listening, and if you didn't like this one, the next one will be another story. All characters and events portrayed in this podcast are based on my truth, with some names and facts changed for privacy. The conversations and dialogues are based on my best memory, but are not word-for-word recreations.